time for a local hero spotlight with Phil Corman from CESA, the local hero, folks, and Joan Walker, owner of Walker Farm at Whortleberry Hill in West Brookfield / New Braintree. This is a new year, 2024. We've been doing the fabulous 413 and being very 413-centric, and you are pushing the envelope of 413 there, Joan.
Like 100 feet from it.
But what you are doing on the very cusp of the 413, Joan, is raising beef cattle.
Correct.
This is not something that you have been doing all your life. This is a sort of latish life career change.
It is.
Tell us that story.
All right. So I was a respiratory therapist, and I used to get laid off before the nurses, so I got laid off not frequently, but occasionally. Anyway.
Enough to make it annoying.
Enough to make it annoying.
Here I am laid off again.
Laid off again. In my 50s, I got laid off, and I said, enough is enough. What else can I do? My husband had grown up on the farm we were on. We had moved back there when his parents passed, and I kind of got interested, what could I do with that? So I was growing vegetables. I sold them on a roadside stand, and I started to be very interested in what I ate because I got diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, and I was very fat. And said, okay, what do I eat the most of? What can I get the most bang for my buck of? And I like beef. I could be a carnivore very easily.
Mm-hmm.
So the more I went down that rabbit hole of, okay, so I want them raised humanely. I want them killed humanely. I want them to be yummy. I want them to be grass-fed, yada, 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 yada. The more I looked at what I wanted, nobody did it all. So I said to hubby, hey, we get a farm. What if I get a cow? The more I talked to people, the more they thought, hey, I'd buy that. So I bought a small herd, and now I run a larger medium-sized herd, and the rest is history. I put in a meat store, and that's what I do.
When you say a medium to large herd, how many head are we talking
about? I run an average of 60. Depends on if they're coming or going. But, you know, you get 20 babies, and you get a big herd, but then you're going to be sending some,
right.
So it kind of fluctuates.
And to that end, is it just beef, or is it beef and veal?
Only beef, no. Only beef. No babies. People call me for veal, and it's like, no, have you ever been there when the baby's born? No,
I know, they're cute.
They are, but by three, they're like adolescent males. They're time to go.
Time
to go out on your own.
Do you hear that, my sons?
It is time.
Yeah. I remember running from the herd of cattle that my school had across the prairie, so yes.
And while they will meet their end and become our food, you are doing your best to try to raise them humanely in a way that no one else really in New England is doing, right?
Well, I'm the only certified humane and certified grass-fed 100% beef producer in New England. So yes, there are people that are nice to their animals, but I kind of decided if I was going to do it, I wanted to do it the whole way. I took a good year in planning this to decide if I actually could kill something I raised. No, I'm not going to kill it myself, but it's going to die. However, the thing that changed that for me was Temple Grandin. I took a couple courses with her, and she said to me, you know, nature isn't kind. If you could let them all live nicely, and some coyote's going to kill the old one, and they're not going to euthanize them. They're going to eat them alive. So, and I've saved a next door farmer's baby that the coyote was trying to drag the baby out of the mother giving birth. So nature isn't kind, but to quote her, but we can be. So I wanted them to live the best life they could. In fact, I will take their end. You couldn't imagine how quickly they are killed. They don't even blink their eyes. And I'll take that any day. I don't know what's in store for me, but I would take that. And if you take care of the animals and you take care of the land, you're going to have a great product to eat that's going to be healthy for the land and healthy for you.
We're speaking with Joan Walker, the owner of Walker Farm at Whortleberry Hill in West Brookfield / New Braintree, right on the cusp of the fabulous 413, and Phil Corman from CESA, the local hero, folks.
From respiratory therapist to cattle raiser, how did you go about that learning curve?
I took probably 4 years. I took every course I could. Massachusetts isn't set up well for that. I took some from UMass, but mostly it was from Cornell. And I also read every book I could, and I visited as many farms and farmers as I could. And I hate to say it, but a lot of times, because I had such high standards for what I wanted to do, if I was going to bother, I can just go next door and buy the next door. I mean, we're in a very rural community, much like the Valley is. I could go next door and buy the next door guy's beef, but I wanted it how I wanted it and raised how I wanted it. And in order to do that, I really needed to do it myself. But that was a long learning curve, and I didn't want to kill any of the animals on the way, so I made sure I took animal welfare and animal handling courses along the way, as well as reading many books. But it was a good 4 years before I actually got the animals. And when they came off the truck, I had never, other than, hi, nice cow, never touched an animal in my life.
Wow.
A cow.
And what about your husband? Did he have any experience
with
cows?
He had, no. Well, yeah, a little. His brother had 4-H cows, and he had a horse. But no, never. So, yeah, we jumped in. But that's sometimes what you got to do, is decide this is what you want to do, prepare yourself, and jump in. What's the worst that could happen? I suppose that I could get killed by a cow.
But that would have been in an instant, and then your end would have been perfect.
Yeah.
Right,
well,
exactly. But I
don't know. Being trampled usually, like...
No, they're going to gore you with their horns. You're not going to be trampled.
This graphic depiction of your demise is brought to you by Joan Walker, owner of Walker Farm at Whataburger Berry Hill.
So you're processing on the farm.
No, I am not.
You're not.
So there is a... Can I say names? There's
sure.
a slaughterhouse, Adams...
Yep.
Kudos to them up in Athol. They are luckily the closest to me, but they are one of the only animal welfare approved slaughterhouses around. There are some, but they are the closest to me and animal welfare approved. And there was a mom that owned it, and that generation had a different attitude than the siblings that own it now. And in fact, one of the animal welfare approved inspectors inspected them. He was the old USDA inspector, and then inspected me like right after. And I said, okay, I go to them. You see what I'm doing. Do I need to be concerned about anything? And he said, nope. And when I interviewed slaughterhouses, which I did, and I watched them kill animals, obviously not mine, I have full confidence in them.
So I always think of farming as kind of two parts. I mean, one is one a good farmer? Is one doing all one needs to do to bring the harvest? In this case, it's animals. But the other part, which I think gets downplayed often, is the business part. Because running a business is different than raising the animals. And sadly, oftentimes you need both sets of skills. So how did you learn the second set of skills, which is running your own business?
Well, running my own business was like everybody. It's kind of learn as you go. However, my husband has on the farm a machine shop. So he was running his own business. When he got laid off, he went to that full time. So we both kind of had it, not within the same amount of years, but we both within a decade had a change of what we did. But so I was used to having to deal with people. And obviously, even if you're a respiratory therapist in a hospital and I was in home care for a lot of time, it's all a business. So anybody that thinks you're not getting any business sense, no matter what you do, is not taking advantage of what they're learning. We're all working for businesses. I started, though, really early and really small. So, like, I was harvesting one or two cows at a time, and those were from freezers in my barn. But people still found me because I was organic, I was humane, I was this and that. And then as I got so it was going to now double to 7 animals a year, I put up a meat store. And that was with help of an APR enhancement grant from. So kudos to the state of Massachusetts because they gave me a grant for part of it. And then I was able to put up a store. And the rest is I just sell from the store. I can talk to the people and talk about the animals, show them the animals. We had some that came yesterday and they had the pictures taken with the animals. They were thrilled.
So people have to go from the 413 100 feet into the 508 to get their meat?
We're not talking about that. That's coming
some
out.
Of the land is coming on 413, I'm sure.
There you
it
go.
Is.
Yeah.
Yeah, there
yeah,
we go.
Yes,
so you're in. You're officially in.
We've got a toe in, and that's the part that counts. What was the most surprising thing about starting this entire endeavor? Because you basically started from the ground up. I mean, you had access to a farm, but like neither you nor your husband knew about animal husbandry or building a business of this type. What was the thing that surprised you most?
It's a small thing, but it's not anything really to do with the business, to do with the animals. They're just like cats and dogs. They all have a personality. They all have preferences. They all can be snitty. They all can want you to stop and pat my butt now and do it for an hour like your dog does. I was amazed at how each individual animal has its own personality and also what families they stay in. I have one who was my grumpiest one in the beginning. In fact, I wasn't going to keep her. And then I learned what she liked and what she didn't like. And now she's wonderful. But she's got four generations now because she's such a good mom. Learning that, I think it's like going from being a dog person to a cat person or something. You've got to learn a whole new species. And they're animals, same as anything else. You know, you can, my nephew and I used to train grasshoppers to jump over things when we were kids. They're sentient somehow, you know. So that was the biggest thing for me, is how individual the animals were. The other thing is how many people on the business side are sick of eating crap. We're all stuck eating crap for the most part here and there, but there are so many people sick. And whenever I say to somebody, I made hot dogs because I love them and I won't eat them because I don't know what's in them, I've never had anybody go, yep, everybody's sick of eating crap.
Yeah. Well, speaking of, you have a cooler.
I do.
Joan Walker, owner of Walker Farm at Waterbury Hill in West Brookfield.
I'm so happy that you make hot dogs.
There you go.
I mean, in general, like, I am such a fan of sausage in general.
Well,
and
I think that too.
Yeah.
These are hot dogs. They're made with my beef. So it's 100% grass-fed. It is organic. It is 100% humane. And this little old Lithuanian guy down in Meriden, Connecticut.
There we go.
Smokes them for me.
Because you're Lithuanian, right? Is that what you said?
I have a little in me.
Yeah.
I mean, fingers work. And then this is, again, kielbasa from my animals. You can't see her face.
Hot dog taste
test. Try the kielbasa, too.
I have a thing with hot dogs. Like, they need natural casings. I don't like skinless ones.
I
agree. They need snap.
Yeah.
Those have great flavor and great snap to them.
Thank
sure
you.
Do.
Thank you. I was going to bring you a steak and this, and I said, no, everybody does that. I'm going to bring you the what?
This is better finger food.
These
for
are
sharing.
My, next to my hot sausage, these are my best sellers, but I bring these everywhere because they just are portable, they're yummy, but who doesn't like hot dogs? They're pricey because they're organic and I've done them. Now I got to bring them to the guy in Meriden, and he's got to smoke them. But they buy them for their kids because the kids won't eat other hot dogs because they taste. Phil's looking, going, if I ate meat, I'd
yeah. Oh, darn, I have to eat Phil's share.
Yes.
Oh, no.
Phil's a vegetarian, and that's okay.
That is. I have a number of customers that are vegetarian other than my meat because their number one concern of why they're vegetarian isn't the meat itself. It's that how are the animals raised?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I won't go on the roof about how many animals are killed while you are harvesting your wheat, et cetera, but I hay, so I know what I kill when I'm out haying.
Things get stuck.
Anyway.
And kind of coming full circle to that, part of what inspired you to do this after being laid off as a respiratory therapist was to get your own life in a
correct.
Semblance of order.
So,
and so tell us how that has gone.
So that has gone unbelievably. So I was very diabetic. Can go from 0 to 60 in my blood sugar, 0 to 400 in my blood sugar in a minute. However, it all started, everybody I think goes the same way. I kind of started eating local, then I started eating clean, then I started, then I paleo, and then the people that usually end up on the low-carb track start usually all, we all kind of go into, unless somebody just says, oh, I'm going to lose weight for New Year's and go keto. But I found the better I ate, the better my blood sugar was. And little by little, amazingly, the weight was coming off a little bit. I am only 5'3", and I was 250 pounds. I mean, I could still get out of the chair, but it wasn't comfortable. So then once I kind of started looking into this, I said, okay, so I don't want to be on insulin. I don't want to be on metformin. I don't want to be on all this stuff. And what if I went low carb? And I felt even better. So truly, like I said, I could be a carnivore because I feel great. But it doesn't change my blood sugar at all. I'm on nothing now.
Wow.
I have most of my customers come to me because they have a health challenge and they want clean meat. And most of those people are autoimmune. Just as an interest to the listeners, I have 5 people that were stage 4 brain cancer, go home and die, that have cured it with their food. I have a lot of epileptics that handle it with their food. They're not on any drugs. So we are what we eat, and you are what you eats. I don't know how anybody thinks that if they can eat meat that's been grazing on glyphosate-laden food, can not have some of that go into them. I always say, how do you want your dinner to have lived?
Joan Walker, the owner of Walker Farm at Whortleberry Hill in Westbrook Field, New Braintree, right on the cusp of the fabulous 413.
The toe in the 413.
With some cows that are grazing in the 413, too, and they're tasting delicious to us in hot dog and kielbasa form. And you can find out more about Joan and Walker Farm and all sorts of other producers of meat and other things through CISA and Phil Corman at buylocalfood.org.
I'm going to eat more hot dogs now.
Yeah, me too.
All right, there you go.